If you enjoyed this program, please sign up for our podcast at lifebetweenthevines.com.
A lot of people have come from science, medicine, biology.
It's a fun game, if you will. There really are no exacting rules.
But I was really good at math and sciences. And again, I grew up here in Napa Valley in agriculture, so I knew a little bit about growing grapes.
After I finished my PhD and came back from France, I had been doing high energy particle physics.
Traverse City is home to me. And even though we're in the midst of a snowstorm out there, I love it.
So when we're celebrating health of soil, it really means healthy people.
Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 441. This week we feature Lulu Handley, proprietor of Handley Cellars in the Anderson Valley. Milla Handley was a very unique woman. Opening a winery under her own name in the Anderson Valley way back in 1982 demonstrated her pioneering spirit. Today, Milla's daughter Lulu operates Handley Cellars with a strong commitment to making the very best wine with the least amount of interference. For my two cents, all wine lovers should visit the Anderson Valley for its less crowded tourism, for its natural beauty, and of course, for the wine. Listen to Lulu on our Vino Lingo segment, defining the term, a come-hither wine. Anderson Valley is, without a doubt, one of the most incredible wine-growing areas in the United States, especially in California. And I'm very happy to be on the phone with Lulu Handley of Handley Cellars in the Anderson Valley. How you doing, Lulu?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Ray.
Thank you for being on the podcast. Okay, I'm gushing a bit, but the Anderson Valley really is just an incredibly beautiful place. I mean, I think everybody should visit there. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, we are very lucky to live here, work here, and make wine from here.
And there's some really fabulous wines, which we're going to get into in just a couple of minutes. But I want to specifically talk about the winery in the beginning. You refer to yourself as a family winery, and your mom, Milla, was the original owner of the winery.
Yeah. My mom started the winery in her basement. She had studied fermentation science at UC Davis in the 70s, and she and my dad moved north along the California coast, kind of continuing to pursue more rural communities, and landed in Anderson Valley, which is the southern part of Mendocino County, and just really loved the community and the wildness. We're still kind of outside of time in a lot of ways, and also saw it as a really great place for growing grapes to make balanced, elegant, food-friendly wines. So she actually started making Chardonnay in her basement in '82, and that's when we were bonded, and then moved to our current and our permanent home just down the road from her basement in '86, '87, and planted the grapes there and opened the tasting room, and we've been open ever since.
That's a real cool story, and you are coming up on your 40th anniversary next year.
We are, yeah, which is kind of, it's just incredibly humbling to be carrying the baton, so to speak, of my mom. I just kind of can't believe the immensity of what she created. We're a small winery, but it's still a lot. We have about 30-40 acres planted of fruit, and we farm it ourselves. We make the wine ourselves. You know, we do everything in-house that we can in the full business. You know, we don't have a parent company or anything like that, and we sell it right out the door where we make the wine. So I'm really amazed and, like I said, humbled to be following in her footsteps. And unlike my mom, she was the winemaker, owner, proprietor, you know, kind of did everything. And I'm not the winemaker. I'm running the business and doing a lot of the sales and marketing and finding my own, you know, the things that I really love doing as well as running the business. So both my mom and I are very hands-on people. And that's what we love about this business, is that it's dirty. You know, you're in the soil. It's and I mean dirty in a good way. Like, it's, you're in the soil, you're in the dirt, you're connected to nature, and it's always changing, and it never stops. You know, even in this last year with the pandemic, the grapes don't stop growing. So there's something just that keeps you honest about that.
Yeah, thank God the grapes didn't stop growing. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
Now, your mom, fascinating woman, the fact that she was ahead of the curve in so many ways in 1982, because you're only 6 years after the Tasting of Paris, California in general getting put on the map. That was a pretty brave thing to do, let alone the fact that she was going to school for this in the 70s. She really knew what she wanted.
You know, my mom, and she, for your listeners who don't know, she passed away last year. And so it's really just amazing to be able to talk about her. I don't think she would call herself brave. And she was constantly self-effacing. I don't even know if she would say she knew what she wanted. She kind of fell into winemaking sideways. She went to UC Davis because it was where she could take her horse. It was a farm school, you know, so there's a stable there, and that was what was important to her. And she started studying art, and she realized that wasn't a very practical career, and so she started studying sciences, and that just kind of led her into winemaking. So it wasn't like she went to school knowing that was what she wanted to do. She thought of it really pragmatically. She knew she wanted to live in the countryside. She had this passion for art and science, and winemaking is this perfect blend of those two things because, you know, there's the science of it. There's all this technical, analytical, the lab work. But at the end of the day, if that's what you're making wine from, it's not going to be a beautiful wine. It will be well made, but it will not be synergistic or beautiful. There has to be this intuitive deep connection with the fruit and with the earth, and that was something that my mom really had. So I don't know if she knew what she wanted when she started, but I do know that she was steadfast in her ideas about what wine should be and how you should run a business and how you should take care of your vineyards and your workers. And that was ahead of the curve in a lot of ways. She was making low alcohol, really food-friendly wines that were fruit-driven way before that was kind of what everyone was doing. You know, at the time, people were just hammering wine with oak and wanting their style to come out more than the fruit. So yeah, she was steadfast and didn't pay attention to trends and didn't care what other people thought of her. And I think that's why her wines have always been really magical and fun, but also humble. And she always wanted them to be approachable.
And that's how it should be. I think it must have been very daunting for you to take over. And my sincere condolences, because obviously she passed, as you said, last year. That's not all that long, and you're kind of thrust into this position. You really, that must have been really something. I mean, you're dealing with grief, and then you have a business you have to run. You have to move on. You have to move forward.
Yeah, thank you. So she had retired in 2015, and I have been since then you know, slowly getting more, slowly and quickly, I guess, getting more and more, just learning more about how the wine industry works and how to run a winery. And I really wish I got more time with her kind of looking over my shoulder. You know, I've been running the business for a couple of years now. And last year, she passed away just a couple weeks before I had my first son, my first baby. And so, yes, last year there was a lot going on and a lot of conflicting and a lot of mixed emotions, you know, joy of our new baby coming and grief of losing my mom and the challenge of running a business during a pandemic and really just being 100% focused on keeping my staff as safe as possible and trying to shift and adapt to the changing world. So it's just the silver lining of losing my mom is that so many people have come out of the woodwork and shared stories with me that I maybe didn't know, and my mom touched a lot of people through her work and through just being this kind of steadfast herself. She, you know, like I said, she didn't really care what other people thought about her, and so she, it's just been amazing to hear the stories that people have been able to share with me, and it's amazing to be able to commemorate her and all the amazing work she did.
What a great legacy. So you are a native of California then, correct?
Yes, I was born here. Mm-hmm. So my family lived in Anderson Valley when I was born, but I was born in the hospital in Sonoma County. So
okay. Yeah, not a lot of hospitals up around that way, are there?
There's a couple. I'm not sure why they went down there, but we had our baby at home, but if we had needed to go to the hospital, we were very much considering the Santa Rosa Hospital. It's not that far different from the other hospitals close by, so... Yeah, we're about an hour to anything like a hospital.
It is. I don't know if I'd say so much as it is remote, but it's a very rural area. And going back to the very roots, winemaking is all about farming, right? I mean, that's what you are. You are a farmer.
Absolutely. Yeah. The better the fruit is, the less you have to do in the cellar. And we are buying some fruit as well, but we work really closely with our growers and have long-standing relationships because, it's a lot more work to fix problems in the cellar than it is to, bring in healthy grapes. So
yeah,
it all starts in the vineyard, and if you don't respect that, I don't see how you could make, clean wine.
Yes.
And one thing that I'm really proud of that my mom did is in 2005, she certified our estate vineyards organic, which was way ahead of the time. We were the first certified organic vineyard in Anderson Valley. And, it's never really been a marketing angle for us. There's people are just kind of thinking about it, but we did it because we wanted to take care of our workers who are working in the fields and the land. And it just... It didn't change our practices that much, except for it does take more labor. And my mom also felt very strongly that it was the most honest expression of the fruit because it's lower inputs. So that's something I'm really proud of that we do.
Sure. And that's a big deal, too, because all this contributes to the cost of a bottle of wine when people are questioning the cost.
Absolutely.
This extra work, right, goes into paid off. Another interesting thing about your mom, which I had read, and I will be honest, I'm reading it off a sheet of paper. First woman winemaker owned winery in the United States with her own name. Man, that's a big deal.
Yeah, and so this is also a great example of my mom's humility. I never heard that. She never told me that because she was not someone to go around tooting her own horn at all. But when she retired in 2015, we were just trying to dig up information for the press release, and we've discovered that. So it was never something she talked about, but it had been written about before or something. And so, yeah, really impressive and never something she promoted about herself.
Good for her. That's nice. So for you, obviously you're growing up around wine. Was this a foregone conclusion that one day you would take over, or what was your own wine journey?
Yeah, it was twisty. growing up in a small town, I wanted nothing to do with this area as a teenager. And as soon as I could leave home, I was pretty excited to get out into, the flashing lights of the world. And I went to college at UC Berkeley, and I studied rhetoric, which is like so unrelated to farming. But during that time, I also was falling in with kind of the organic gardening crowd there, and I started taking environmental science courses and started getting really idealistic about ideas of ecology and, ecology and working with the earth and tending the earth, and decided I wanted to have a farm. And it took me another, year or so to realize that I had a farm, that I had grown up on one. because I did not think about, you know, from that lens of academic studies of ecology and organic farming, I was not thinking about our vineyard as a farm, which is just, you know, very naive of me. But once I realized that that was what my parents did, I started imagining coming back. And I think I always kind of had that love. I always was really connected to the place, but it took me kind of finding my own way to actually realize that. And so I did a bunch of different things. You know, I graduated in 2008, which was like the worst time ever to get a job. And so I didn't really. I would do little odds and ends and traveled and would come back and work for my mom. And then I decided to move to Spain and work at a winery in Spain, in Galicia, a really awesome family producer, Do Ferrero, who makes pretty much exclusively Albarino. And they let me do everything, and that it was crush, and, you know, I was on the crush pad, and then when we weren't bringing grapes in, they were letting me do, like, all of the analysis that they could do in-house, and I was doing as much of the winemaking as possible. They were really open with me and let me kind of, yeah, learn anything I could, and I loved it, but I also realized I didn't want to be a winemaker. I didn't want to be inside in the cellar, and I was more drawn to the vineyards and being outside. And then just kind of what it turned out was really needed was for was not for me to become the winemaker, because when my mom retired, her assistant winemaker Randy was a really natural progression to take the reins. And but what I did need to do was to take the reins of running the business. And so I had never I don't have any business school education or any experience in that capacity. So it's been a really fun, exciting, challenging learning on the job. And I really love it. I love the multifaceted nature of running a small business, especially a winery, because it's everything from, yeah, vineyard management to the cellar work to all the administrative work that is sort of not glamorous but is so important with compliance. And, you know, wine is heavily regulated, to marketing and sales and hospitality. And that's really, my love is really connecting food and farming and people. So, you know, from I love getting to host people on the property, whether it's an event or just our regular tasting room days, and having them be sitting, you know, a stone's throw away from the vines themselves. And, you know, it's nothing better than taking people on a tour of the vineyard, letting them taste the grapes, you know, smell the grape blossoms, whatever, you know, season that we're in, and then sitting down and tasting the wines that were made from that fruit and have never left the property. You know, it's yeah. From fruit to bottle, they're never leaving the property until someone buys that wine and takes it out the door. So it's just an incredible business to be in that has so many aspects and a really interesting combination of, yeah, this agricultural farming all the way through the to, you know, pouring it in someone's glass and having a really beautiful meal with someone. So.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm curious, though, because of this interaction with people, when you do run in, you and I were chatting again about our goal is making wine less scary, which is obviously yours as well, but how do you disarm somebody who you can see in their eyes there's a fear, they don't want to be felt as if they don't know anything? How do you deal with that as a winemaker?
Well, that's a great question. I think it depends on the person. And so, you know, being able to read the person and read what it is they're interested. Some people are really interested in the technical stuff. Those are a small number of people. Someone who is maybe hasn't gone wine tasting very much and is new to it, I just like to ask them, do you like it? You know, instead of saying, like, well, what do you taste? Because I think it can be really hard for people to start picking out different attributes of wine. Sometimes they feel it can be really intimidating. And sometimes they just taste if they like it or not. And I think starting there is really good, and letting people know that it really doesn't matter what scores this wine got or who else likes it. What matters is, do you like it? And if you like it, then there is an opening to starting to talk if they're interested. You know, some people don't. That's as far as they want to go.
Sure.
But other people may want to start understanding how you could perceive more than just, so I like it or not. And so that gives you the opening. But I think it's really just about the person in front of you and if they like the wine or not. And if they don't like it, then that's the most important thing. It doesn't matter what someone else with accolades said. I think what Handley and what Anderson Valley in general is so great about is we're really down to earth. It's not like Napa, yeah. and I think now Sonoma more and more. There really isn't a lot of status around here. and so, you know, we're happy to see anyone walk through our doors, and we just want to have a nice time with you. And if that's talking about wine, great. If that's talking about your dog and your kids, that's great too. I think wine is about making connections with people. It does not need to be about the winemaking or do you detect, you know, hot rain on a cold pavement. You know, it doesn't need to be about that. It can just be about sitting down and having a little, my mom would say, social lubrication, just to kind of grease the wheels a little bit. So
sure. Yeah.
We're really down to earth. We just like to have a good time. And yeah.
Well, I think that whole area is wonderful for tourism. As you pointed out, other areas do get very busy, very crowded, and up there the pace is slower, and you've got, you know, you go a little north, you've got the ocean, you got the redwoods, these wonderful winding roads. Certainly an area I would recommend tourists to visit.
Yeah, anyone who loves the outdoors and who loves food and wine, you know, we get a lot of people who are camping. I mean, it's what's great about Anderson Valley is there's kind of something, there's not a lot to do, but there is a wide range. So you can camp at Hendy Woods, our state park, and, you know, be underneath the towering old growth redwoods and be hiking and biking and you know, come and have your wine tasting and your chacos. And you can also stay at some really lovely hotels in the area, and there's beautiful meals to be had. And nothing is fancy, but you can certainly have all the amenities and luxuries if that's more your cup of tea. But everywhere you go, you know, you're very likely to meet the owner. Maybe the owner is fixing the plumbing that day. You're very likely to interact directly with the people who really make the place what it is. And I think that's what's special about Anderson Valley is it's just a very small community. And that sense of community comes out to me in the wines as well. It's not just about the climate here and the soil types. It's about the people who are making the wines. And like I said, we're down-to-earth people who like to have a good time. And yes, we love a beautiful wine, but at the end of the day, it's more about sitting together and having a meal with friends than about, you know, picking apart the techniques of a wine.
Yes, I completely agree. Let's talk about the wines. And tell me about, if you don't mind, just kind of walking through, obviously you do Pinot Noir, which of course is famous for up in Anderson Valley, but talk through what you make, if you would, please.
Yeah. So when my mom started the winery, she started making Chardonnay in her basement, like I said. And then when she planted the vines, she did plant Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, but she planted the Pinot for sparkling wine production. And so we are lucky to be neighbors with Roederer. And she has always been friends with the winemaker there. And so our first Pinot Noir planting, some of them were these Roederer field selections, you know, unknown clones.
Sure.
And in general, the Pinot Noir planted in the 80s and 90s was more of this sparkling wine clones. And then sideways happened, and all of a sudden red Pinot Noir became the whole winery shifted. And so we didn't start out making red Pinot Noir, but now it's really important part of what we do, and it's the majority of our production. We make an Anderson Valley blend, which is, you know, just a really lovely mixture of our own estate fruit and then the other fruit that we buy from neighboring vineyards that kind of all along the valley. And then we make a single vineyard designate from each of those wines, if so long as the year warrants it. And what's really, to me, what's really great about being able to taste all these different single vineyards is our winemaking isn't vastly different on them. Of course, there's little changes, but you're mostly getting to taste the different vineyards. And there's clonal differences, but it's really like, I think of it as a little tour of the valley. And so if you have been to Anderson Valley, it's this long, narrow valley that runs northwest, close to the coast, southeast, more inland. We're very close to the coast, and so we're in the coolest part of the valley, and the wines, the Pinots from there, tend to be a little softer and a little more austere. And then as you get more inland, you're getting more round and abundant wines. And so it's really neat to be able to make these different offerings that tells the story of our place. And also we find that they kind of all have their own personalities. And so our customers have a favorite. And I always love knowing what that is because I feel like it tells you something about that person. It's a little bit of a personality test
sure.
as well. But then we also continue to make Chardonnay and a really lovely middle-of-the-road Chardonnay. And I mean that in, not in a boring sense, but we're using a little bit of oak and a little bit of malolactic. So we have a little bit of that rich California feeling, but only a little bit. And it's not a big, buttery Chardonnay at all. The fruit that we're getting off of our vineyard still has great acid because we're just 10 miles from the ocean, and it takes such a long time to ripen. And then we also have Gewürztraminer planted on the estate, and these Alsatian varietals do really well in the Anderson Valley. They're kind of the underdog of the Anderson Valley. You know, now Pinot Noir is what everyone knows, and it's the predominant varietal planted, but Gewürztraminer, Pinot Gris, Pinot Blanc, Riesling, these are some of our favorite wines to make, and I think they tell the Anderson Valley story even more uniquely in a way than the Pinot Noir. So we love making those. And we also make a tiny lot of Sauvignon Blanc. We make Syrah and Zin from slightly inland neighbors in Redwood Valley where it's a little warmer, off of a beautiful old head-pruned vineyard that we've been working with for a long time. And we still make some sparkling wines, not every year, but kind of every 3 or 4 years we'll make a Blanc de Blanc or a Brut Rosé. And those, my mom's favorite wines to drink, and I have to say mine too, are bubbly. So those are really fun. And we try not to be too serious about those. You know, they're made in the traditional style, but we want them to be fruit-forward, California fun, sparkling wines.
Nice. I have to say my favorite has been your estate Chardonnay. That was just
awesome.
Fantastic. It's one of those you sip and you do a double take like, wow. And of course, after that, you say, I want more. So you continue drinking it, which is nice.
Well, I won't say what it is, but that will lead perfectly into my lingo, my vine lingo term. It's a little teaser for it.
Okay. Well, we're not that far away from that, so we're going to get to that in just a couple of minutes. One thing I'm always curious about, and as you said, you're not the winemaker, but you're part of the process because you're a small company. What do you do to prepare for harvest?
Me personally or Hanley Cellars?
Well, I would say you personally.
Well, gosh, I mean, you know, it's sort of like as soon as the grapes come in, you're preparing for the next harvest in a lot of ways. What I'm personally working on is the business side of things. So the sales projections, and basically we don't want to make wine if we don't know where it's going to be sold to. So this is sort of the unglamorous side. I feel like there can be a misconception that a winery is just about, you just make the wine and you sell it in your tasting room or wherever. And there's all this other, I'm so grateful for my administrative team. Let me put it that way. Mm-hmm. after we bring in the grapes, there's a lot of activity of crushing the grapes. And so for the white wines, that's happening kind of immediately when the fruit comes in. And the red wines, the grapes are sitting in fermenters to extract the flavors from the skins. And then, you know, depending on which varietal it is, we press off the juice off the skins. And then everything's fermenting. But, you know, by October, November, we're creating the plan for the following year, the budget, which includes all the sales. So that also is when we're trying to communicate to, well, before pruning starts, we're trying to communicate to our growers who are working with, and also, to, you know, within our vineyard, what our plans are. And that's the opportunity you have to, if you're going to decrease any production, you really want to let people know before they start investing in their vineyard, which pruning generally starts in December. So harvest starts December the year before in a lot of ways.
Sure.
And then, you know, leading up to that moment of picking the grapes, there's a lot of factors that go into making those decisions. And in our community, one of the most important factors is labor. And, you know, we hand harvest all of our fruit, and we are super dependent on the skilled labor of harvesters. And in such a small community, there's not that many people who do this work, and it's really important work. So finding that team who you're going to be able to count on, and lots of times they're picking at lots of different wineries, and so you hope you get your fruit picked when you want it to, but you might not if you can't get the crew. So that's something I think is, you know, again, back to us being an agricultural product, is there are real people who are making sure that the fruit comes in clean and at more or less the right time. So our winemaker, Randy, he really pulls that crew together with the help of our year-round staff. But that is just a critical part of harvest. And then, you know, you're making sure you have the space. So you're making sure we have the barrels that we need. It's a kind of never-ending cycle.
Sure. Well, it is just that. It's a cycle, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, you have all this going round and round because it is agriculture. My favorite question to ask winemakers, I don't know how often you get interviewed or you get to talk to the media, but you do talk to plenty of people who come to visit. And what is the one question that you've never been asked that you would like to be asked?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. It sort of reminds me of when I moved to Maine, the way people would give directions. It's the house that you can't see from the road. gosh, the question that I always want to ask people is, so I've taken on my mom's business and am carrying on, along with the help of my family, this family-owned winery. And to me, that is really important that our winery stays in this family. And what I'm always curious to know is, why does that matter to you, to the customer, to the consumer? Why is it important that wineries don't continue consolidating? And why do you care that we're not owned by like a big corporate house? So I know that doesn't answer your question, but maybe that's what I would want to be asked is why does that matter?
It's interesting you would say that. I'm going to preface it by saying, how many cases do you produce?
About 9,000 right now.
Okay, so a small winery is something a lot of our listeners seek out because of everything you've said so far, tender, loving care and hands-on. I think that's the answer to that question for me as a wine fan. So for our listeners, I guess number one, you do have a tasting room. If our listeners would like to learn a little bit more about you online, how would they find out about you or come for a tasting?
Great. Yeah, so we have a website. It's HandleySellers.com. And then on social media, we're at HandleySellers. That's HandleySellars. So you can find us on Facebook and on Instagram. Signing up for our mailing list is great. So on our website, there's a link to do that. You can also email us at info@handleysellers.com. And we only send out a couple emails a month, so you won't be bombarded, but that's a good way to hear about any upcoming events or new releases. And then we love to have people visit us. We are pretty remote, and so... You know, not everyone can make it, and so that's why definitely check us out online. But our tasting room is open We're just shifting into our summer hours, and we're pretty much open 7 days a week right now. We do highly recommend appointments. We don't require them, but we highly encourage them because we have limited seating right now. We're doing all of our tastings outdoors. Right now, Mendocino County is allowed to operate indoors, but we're not doing that. We're just operating outdoors, and we have a beautiful courtyard. My mom planted the landscape in the late 80s, so it's really lovely, mature trees, and it's just the most magical place to sit. And there's a lot of magical places in Anderson Valley, so I highly recommend, you know, a multi-day trip up here and visiting a handful of wineries. And we're open, yeah, pretty much every day of the week. Call to make an appointment or book online. And I'm reachable at lulu@hanleysellers.com, and I would love to hear from anyone.
And that's pretty cool. You can send a note to the owner, and she'll answer you. And it is a magical place. I'm just going to reinforce that. Lulu, this is really fun chatting with you. I hope you guys continue to do well as we all come out the other side of COVID, and I hope to meet you in person one day. Thank you for your time.
Oh, I would love that. Thank you, Ray. It's been a pleasure.
Learn more by visiting HanleySellers.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Additional original music by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Copyright 2021.